Hello, and welcome to Autistically Unapologetic, the unfiltered and unmasked podcast about everything autism. Here's your host, Devin Morrissey.
Hi, and welcome to Autistically Unapologetic with me, Devin Morrissey. I would like to officially welcome you all to episode 31, where I will be continuing the conversation about autism in the performing arts. Now, autistic individuals have become more heavily involved in the performing arts now more than ever, as research has shown that performing arts has provided benefits for us on the autism spectrum, such as building confidence and communication skills while offering a structured environment. Many autistic people have used theater, film, music, and dance as a place for emotional expression and social connection while building on a professional career in the entertainment industry. Now, my next guest is helping to lead the charge of more disabled and neurodivergent talent in the performing arts. She's an autistic actress, storyteller, singer, and autism advocate who stars in the powerful short film Once More Like Rain Man. And she's here to share her story of how she got started in the business, as well as offering tips of advice for all of you autistic performers out there. Please welcome to Autistically Unapologetic, Bella Zoe Martinez. Bella, how you doing?
Hey, howdy, hey.
Listen, Bella, I have to say thank you. First off, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule right now. I know that you have a lot on your plate, which mm-hmm. something that we are both currently doing together right now, and we're going to get into that, as well as your powerful short film that is truly mind-blowing, and I cannot wait to discuss more about it. So if you're ready, Bella, let's just hop right into it. Are you ready?
Yepers. Let's go.
All right. So Bella, whenever I have an autistic person on my podcast, I always like to start from the very beginning, which is sort of the beginning of the autistic journey. My first question to you, Bella, is when were you first diagnosed autistic? When did you find out that you were autistic? And what was your reaction to all of it?
Well, my siblings, Kennedy and Alex, were diagnosed first. My sister, I think, was probably closer to 3 or 4, or like maybe 5. But Alex was maybe a little, like, he didn't go years. He went years without talking and just decided to start talking and didn't shut up. I saw my siblings go through ABA therapy. I was diagnosed very early, and I decided I wanted nothing to do with it.
Interesting.
They had to rewrite the program more than any other kid, because they nicknamed me General Patton because I'd rather lose the battle and win the war. Oh. And then again, they nicknamed Kennedy Napoleon because I was the only one that went toe-to-toe with her. The therapist came up with some very creative nicknames for us kids. But autism's always been around me. It's my normal. I didn't really realize I was autistic. I didn't really realize that my normal was not normal to everywhere else. So it didn't really have a label in my early years. It was just, oh, I'm just Bella. That's it.
I love that. It's interesting because, first off, a lot of people don't know this, but you are one of 3 autistic children in your family. And that was surprising to me because when I first met you 2 years ago, I had absolutely no idea that you were one of 3 autistic children. I was like, wow, I can only imagine what that must be like. But also, too, what's so impressive was that our age difference, because, you know, you were after the 2000s, I was pre-2000s, and there were a lot of stereotypes at the time that kind of came with that. So I'm super thankful that you and your siblings never really had to experience that, because it was different times. But what's interesting is that autism has always sort of, in a way, been around you and sort of been helped be a part of who you are, which is pretty neat. Tell me a little bit about your childhood growing up on the autism spectrum, and what was that like for you? Because just getting a chance to know you just through our mutual connections and our affiliations, I know it wasn't necessarily always easy.
Yeah, it wasn't. It's definitely interesting having siblings, like being myself autistic and having people in the spectrum in my house, because we had the full spectrum in my house, technically speaking. It was not always easy. I mean, like, I don't always understand my siblings, and my siblings don't always get me. But there's some things that we have in common, like our interests in like art, animation, and they're my biggest cheerleaders and biggest defenders. Because if anyone starts some shit, I know they're gonna put their necks out for me. But also, will tease me on shit.
I
I mean,
love it.
Alex and I love playing this game that we have been playing, Cookie Run Kingdom, and like he will just be
Oh.
like, Bella, it's time. We have to play the game today. I'm like, all right, all right. Like, he normally does not get persistent, but when it's something that we both likes and he knows that we both like it, he will drag my ass down. Like, bet we need to play it right now. Come on, let's go.
There's so much autism in the household. So it was kind of just like you were able to connect to your siblings on such a personal level. Because, there's always a saying that, when you meet one person with autism, you only met one person with autism. And it's kind of interesting just to sort of see how it was like growing up for you, because sometimes it's a as a child, you're wondering like, oh, why am I so different, all that? And then you connect with your siblings, Kenny Docs, and it's like, oh, well, they also get it as well. And that's why, like, we're so close, because as we know each other's, autism, even though it can be different from one or the other. So tell me a little bit about what got you into acting. What was your inspiration for starting to act? Was it a favorite actress or actor, or was it like a favorite TV show or even film?
It was actually like my family's involvement in Hollywood because my parents are both writers and they started off
Oh,
like writing for Stan Lee, but also being
wow.
play
Wait,
actors.
they wrote, your parents wrote for Stan Lee.
Yes, they knew him before streaming was a thing because he had a crazy idea called streaming, and that
Holy
was before it was a
cow.
thing. And like they like one person had a really good impression of him where he'd jump on the conference table like, I got this great idea. And like they wrote a thing called Scuzzle for him. They still have that idea, actually.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. My parents also kind of helped on like other films, like as punch writers or just like other stuff. I think they helped like with Bring It On, the cheerleading movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they like because there was a scam, like a whole thing that fiasco happened, like where like this guy kind of was being a bit of a douche, and kind of decided to wreck the last part of the whole script and delete all the backups. So they basically kind of had to fly in and save the last act of the film.
Oh my
That
gosh.
was written by my mom and dad, so if they didn't swoop in
Whoa.
and save the last act, then nothing would not be there. I think my Aunt Max was actually the one that kind of recommended the script be like greenlit, and same with Scream, I think.
Wow, that is insane, but that's also amazing at the same time, because you weren't around in 2000, 2001, right?
No, I'm a 2005 baby.
I love, oh my gosh, now I feel really old. But Bring It On, it was such a cultural phenomenon. And I had actually no idea that your parents were involved with that, let alone working with one of the greatest comic marvels of our time, Stan Lee. May he rest in peace up there. But thank the Lord
Yeah.
for his amazing, brilliant brain for bringing all of the Avengers franchise together into
Yeah.
one. Just knowing that your parents had actually worked with him, and just the family ties that you've had to help you get into this industry, it's absolutely insane.
It's a small world.
It really is. Who knew? Who knew? The connections that you have in this industry are so amazing. And what's interesting is that a lot of people say that, oh, it's a one size up or anything like that. No, it's what we like to call networking. And having those connections are really important to help your career in this industry, because I think as any aspiring actor or actress, especially on the autism spectrum, knows, that door is heavily locked. It's not even just heavily locked, it is padlocked, it is sealed shut, everything in between is. So just even able to get in by just having those good connections and networking, it's wow. And thank God for your parents helping save Bring It On, because God only knows what that would have been like had your parents not helped.
Even if like they had good connections, they've always told me like they could hold the door open for me, but I have to be the one to choose it to kick it in. And kick it in I did.
Absolutely. You definitely kicked in the door, that's for sure. Now, you weren't just one of many autistic actors that are beginning to take over the entertainment industry. Now, it has been evident that over the years, autistic roles have been played by non-autistic actors, but now we've begun to see a turning point in the terms of autistic actors getting hired, working in the industry, and most especially, getting paid. How does it feel to play a part of this movement?
Kind of surreal, honestly. Kind of surreal. I still don't believe it sometimes, honestly. I'm like, man, I don't know. Like, oh, look, my God. It's kind of crazy that a lot of people actually like my work, because I didn't think I'd get this far, because I was just the kid that just doodled in my sketchbook in my notebook, or like any piece of paper I could get my hands on. Because that's kind of like what inspired me to begin with acting. Like, I always just like the fact of telling stories. I used to just upload silly videos and edit them with my siblings or friends to YouTube, because that's what I did when I was a little kid. I still make YouTube videos. I love the art of storytelling. It's great.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. It's an outlet, but it also kept me sane from when I was being bullied.
Yeah.
That was a thing. Being emotionally and psychologically abused, not ideal.
Yeah, no, it's not ideal for any one of us that have been through those trials and those tormenting situations. It is not fun, and it plays a huge effect in our life. But what's interesting is that you've been able to take that just from even knowing you these last 2 years and putting that into your work has been truly inspiring to watch. Now, from what I actually heard and also did my research on, you had an unintentional start in the entertainment industry at only 7 years old when you did an anti-bullying PSA. And after that, you ended up actually not acting for at least 5 years. What made you decide that you wanted to come back to acting after a 5-year hiatus?
I don't really remember doing the thing that I did when I was 7, honestly. Memory's weird. There's some things I remember, some things I don't. That's one of them. I don't really fully remember. The memory, apparently just decided it was important. But when I was just like, I always really thought acting, like, I didn't know acting could be like a full-time job when I was younger, because I remember just always playing a lot of video games and watching a lot of animated movies and media, and being like somewhere down the line, I think I was maybe like 9 or 10, being like, wait, you could do this stuff and just like get paid? But I think I'm like, I didn't know what voice acting fully was until much later. I think it was somewhere in 2017. I'm like, wait, voice acting? What the heck's that? I didn't realize that's what it was. That's why it blows my mind. And I always say voice actors are sirens. my friend Veronica came up. My friend Veronica, I call her V, came to me being like, Bella, voice actors are sirens. I'm like, elaborate. Well, voice actors can make themselves, or like just actors in general, can make themselves sound completely different to how they normally sound. I'm like, oh my God, voice actors are sirens. Actors are sirens. And I couldn't unsee it. We actors are sirens, unfortunately, but we use our powers for good.
You are definitely right about that. Let me tell you, having that outlet to work with is something that is so powerful. And in a way, you know, you talk about, you know, playing the video games, and, you know, you talk about like actors being sirens. In a way, it's almost kind of like you felt like you, it's almost like you found your outlet in terms of like where you feel like you belong in the place of life. Because as kids, we always think about how like, oh, well, I would love to do that, but maybe it's just, you know, for fun. It's not like an actual job. But when you grow older and you become more involved in life, then it's like, hey, I could actually take this as a career and run with it, which is actually pretty neat in a way, because you've been able to really take this love that you have and really hone it in to your craft, which is amazing. So you've had the chance to land a few commercials, such as for Instagram, and feature film roles, including The Infiltrators and The Vanished. But in 2022, you transitioned to storytelling with the short film Glory and Injustice. Now, what was the inspiration for you to incorporate your life into this powerful film?
Well, Glory and Injustice was actually like one of the films that I think, if I remember, like Sean Crouch and like think my parents kind of helped write on it as well, and I was just starring in it as Glory, and Eric was Lord and Justice. I remember it was originally workshopped as a hero and daughter, but then it slowly went into villain daughter, and I'm like, okay, but and then they, I remember them playing with the script, and like when we finally shot it, it was actually at my house. It was actually
Really?
my living room. We transferred my living room into like the set. And it was, I think, if I recall, it was like a 2-day shoot,
Oh,
if I
wow.
recall correctly. And I remember that. It was crazy. It was somewhere before lockdown was even a thing,
Oh
if
my
I can remember.
gosh.
I was a wee little baby high schooler. I was ninth grade. Oh my God, it's actually crazy on how much I changed, like physically, like, because like my teeth, I didn't really get braces, like my Invisalign at that time yet. So my teeth were kind of still a little crooked, messed up. I
Wait
usually
till
brush
your 30s. Wait till your 30s.
them.
You're 10 years away. Just wait till your 30s.
I used to not like the smile I had because of how messed up my teeth were. I think it was also because I got my tooth knocked, like kind of chipped as well, and I had to fix it when I was a kid.
Oh my gosh, I am so sorry. I find it kind of interesting that you were able to take inspiration to really incorporate your life into Glory and Justice.
I remember explicitly not making Glory autistic because I wanted to play characters that weren't autistic too. And that's
Oh,
important for us. Because
it
I can play anybody, dang it! Let me play
is.
the mean girl for fuck's sake!
Well, it's
Or like a
interesting about
villain.
acting because you get to explore different characters or maybe different parts of people that have been a part of your life. Like you talk about, you were bullied as a kid, you got to play a bully. If you're autistic, maybe you can play non-autistic. It's exploring those different roles that maybe you never know were even there. And that's like
Yeah.
the beautiful part about storytelling, especially right before COVID, and honestly, quite frankly, just how much has changed since those times. As heartbreaking as it is, it also serves in a strange way as inspiration for the projects that you've worked on. And sometimes when we have traumatic events or when we see traumatic events happening through us, that turns sometimes into the most beautiful portraits of art that we can think of. And especially with Glory and Injustice, you were able to take that trauma that you went through and really put that into display, which is so important. Now, throughout the last 2 years, you have been on a powerful, exciting, and impactful journey when your latest short film, Once More Like Rain Man, was released. This Oscar-qualified short film follows Zoe, a young
Zoe.
autistic actress traveling to audition after audition after audition in Los Angeles as she looks for her big break while she's also navigating the real-life challenges us autistic people face on an everyday basis. Ain't that the truth? How did Once More Like Rain Man come about, and what was the inspiration behind this short film?
The inspiration was my real auditioning life. It was actually based off actual auditions. Like,
Wow.
actual auditions. Those are real questions I've actually gotten. A lot of them are like girls don't. I've actually gotten like, you don't look autistic. You don't sound autistic. I'm sorry, buddies. That's supposed to be a like,
Yeah.
what? I'm sorry. I'm not this. That's supposed to have a look. It's like asking if it's not VD. And like,
Exactly.
I'm like, sorry. Like, what's supposed to look like? I'm not Rain Man. I'm just a Bella. That's all I am.
Exactly. You're just Isabella. You're not Rain Man.
I've always gone by Bella because, like, I remember just feeling more comfortable with that nickname as a kid. Because I think for some reason there were just a bunch of girls in the class I had that had the name Isabella and just went by it. And I'm like, oh, Bella sounds cooler anyway.
It
Kid logic.
does.
You can't argue with kid logic sometimes.
You really can't. Like, as a kid, when it works for you, it works for you. And it sticks with
Yeah,
you. It
and
really
when it
does.
came to Once More Like Rain Man, I remember being really pent up and frustrated with some of these auditions because it really felt like they were just making caricatures or just like characters who felt like more like a plot device. nicer obstacle rather than an actual person. And I'm like, what the frick is going on here? It's like playing a video game and finding out, wait a minute, I'm not there, I'm the obstacle, what the heck is this? I got chipped! And I'm like, my parents saw that and like, I wanted to change that. And I started writing the script. And that's kind of what led to this. It was technically my senior thesis because I kind
Ooh.
of got screwed out of high school. This was over the last week of like a strike for the actor strike in 2023.
I will say this to all of our listeners out there. I had the chance to watch this short film when the theater group that we are both a part of actually had the chance to perform at a viewing of Once More Like Rain Man at the Ed Asner Center here in Los Angeles. And it was so powerful and so accurate because I think for so many of us, it is hard to function sometimes in a world that wasn't necessarily made for us, and having to work with the life's challenges of the social communication, having to be told, oh, you don't look like you're autistic, or being told, hey, you don't really fit the role for this autistic character. And you're just like, huh? But what's so powerful about this film was that it really depicts just one of so many people, and especially women with on the autism spectrum, because a lot of people for so long didn't necessarily categorize women to be on the autism spectrum when for years, all of us that are in the autism community and are a part of it, we all knew. Just society just decided to finally wake up, be like, hey, we're noticing this trend. And we're all like, you think? We've already known this in the autism community for years. So I will say that watching that film was just so incredible. And it really is a shame that it hasn't been Oscar nominated because it was Oscar qualified. In fact, it was actually the first.
It was Oscar nominated. Like, it was qualified, but it didn't get that far. I know what won, though. And it was a film that we personally beat in a festival that we won. It was the French one. It was the French one. Of
Hopefully
course, it
the
was
Academy
French.
will wake up one day and realize that your film deserves much
Yeah.
more approval and appraisal than I think it honestly is getting. And the fact that I was actually blown away from learning after seeing Once More Like Rain Man all those months ago was that you don't just talk the talk. You literally walk the walk of advocating for the autism community. Now, it was mentioned at the screening of Once More Like Rain Man that around 40% of the cast and crew of Once More Like Rain Man are neurodivergent, which is absolutely outstanding, including a current star on the rise from The Pitt, Tal Anderson. What
Yeah.
was the driving factor in making sure that a good chunk of your cast and crew were neurodivergent?
I remember when we were getting people, like my dad, my mom and dad, like my dad was on All American and my mom was on another project, and we're basically making favors and calls and like, hey, we're working on a cool thing. You want to come on this? And we just chose a lot of the best people for the job, but a lot of it was people just like being there for the cause or because they were neurodivergent themselves. And a lot of them just like really cared about what they were working on. And we did leave the Palace Theater in better shape than we found it. And my mom knew those guys, and they're really nice. They're really chill. The guys that own the Palace Theater, because that was a one location shoot. The entire film was shot in one location.
You're right.
And it's huge. It's like a six-story building.
It definitely is. I don't think I've ever told you this, but I used to live in downtown LA. And I think right as we were starting our theater group, I used to actually live about one, two, three, four blocks away from the Palace Theater. So,
Really?
had I known you at the time, hey, I could have possibly, shot this with you. So, who knew?
Dang.
Who knew?
That's crazy. Came to like everyone else who was on the film, like it was different forms of neurodivergent. One of the casting ladies, to like one of the girls that play the casting ladies, gosh, why am I spacing her name? Danielle Perez. She actually is in a wheelchair. She doesn't have feet. There was also like people with wheelchairs, or like people who had walk like mobility aids, or service dogs. There was one service dog on set. His name was Max, and he was a very good boy. He
Oh, that
wasn't allowed to
dog.
be on camera, but he was a very good boy. He just sat under the table, just being happy and just being like sitting very happily. And like I know in some photos he was just sitting next to me and Suanne as I was looking over the last shot of the film is the first scene. So that was our last shot of the entire shoot. And I remember just sitting on the mattress that's in the background with Suanne, and Max was just sitting behind us, just chilling. Like, just, you need the emotional support, doggos. But it was a really relaxed set because we put accommodations in. We, like, put some stuff, like, ramps on, like, the, like, where, like, some stuff was. So we could, like, if anyone had a wheelchair, you could, like, get up. But also made easier for accessibility of the crew who had to pull stuff up those very uneven stairs. Seriously, those stairs are very uneven. It's
Yes.
like a hike trying to climb those freaking stairs. The ele I know Suanne was terrified of the elevator, so we had someone manually operate that. But it made it so much easier just having that there. Just and like being able to take breaks. Because I remember being like, why are you guys working yourselves into the pavement? That's stupid. And my mom, I think it was my mom or dad, they were like, yeah, you're right, that is stupid. We're here to make something fun, not cure cancer, guys. Come on. And I remember Matt was being like, wait, we could take breaks. I'm like, yeah, go take a break, buddy. You need it.
It's so awesome to hear that you really walked the walk in bringing in neurodivergent talent, because I think at that time, when we look back, a lot of people weren't doing what you did at that time, was really making sure that neurodivergent people and disabled individuals were getting that chance to work on an actual film set. Because what we're seeing now, it's nice, but there's so much more progress that can be made. And especially where a lot of us on the autism spectrum, we are so incredibly creative. We know things about the entertainment industry inside and out. And it's sad that a lot of them don't really ever get that chance to, let alone act on a set, or let alone even work on a film set like yours. And I think what's so amazing is that you actually helped open the door to that and showing them, like, hey, this is what a real life set is like, which is so important. Now, I would actually love to discuss a little bit about a fun performing arts family that we are actually both currently a part of, and we have been a part of since its inaugural launch. Epic Players is a neurodiverse theater performing arts company in New York City that opened a branch here in Los Angeles about 2 years ago. We are both inaugural members of its LA branch when it first opened in 2024. It has been just announced that we are both set to be in Epic's LA's first main stage production of Peter and the Starcatcher, which is set to open for 1 weekend only in the spring, beginning on May 14th, and we run through May 17th. What inspired you to try out for Epic, and what has been your favorite part about Epic so far?
I think I remember when I first got that audition, I remember my mom sat me down and is like, hey, these people are kind of like you. It's like doing what you're trying to do, like make a future that has you in it. So I remember like just kind of auditioning and just being surprised I got in to begin with.
What?
I was actually surprised. I don't know.
Really?
I was really shocked because I didn't think it would actually I would actually get in. Because I remember being kind of lonely at that time because I didn't really have many in-person friends, like a lot many people, many connections in LA like that were my age. Because oh my God, that was just a crazy, crazy time. Very varying headspace at that time for 2024, Bella, but my favorite part of Epic is just the community that it has.
Well, first off, I am shocked to hear that you were shocked that you got in, because I think you were meant to be an inaugural Epic player from the very beginning. There were 14, 15 of us that started this from the very beginning. And since those 2 years, we have grown in to, I think, 50 people, which is absolutely wild. Who would have thought that we would have grown so quickly? But I remember that very first class, all the way leading up to that very first performance at the Bourbon Room in Hollywood. There was a reason why we were all meant to be a part of that first group, because we just all blended right on the spot. And we all had that instant connection of being like, hey, we're all neurodivergent. We all love to perform, even though some of us have not done it for years, but we get it. What I love is like the different age ranges we had. You were being the youngest, obviously. You were the baby at the time to now. God, I forgot who was the oldest, and I don't really want to say exactly. I think it was just so special at that time, and it's still special to this day as we're continuing to grow and grow and grow. And what I thought was pretty cool was that at the cabaret last year, around this time, a lot of people didn't know this, but you were doing the Eye to Eye from the Goofy movie, and lo and behold, comes the voice of Goofy himself, Bill Farmer, just walking up those steps to introduce you as you performed. And I'll never forget, in addition to all of us being shocked when he spoke in that Goofy voice, you were probably just the most stunned, because this is like a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It doesn't happen every other day when you're singing a song from the Goofy movie and being introduced by the voice of Goofy himself. Yeah, that is pretty impressive.
That was the most insane thing. Because, like, I remember, like, hearing about, like, Goofy was going to be there, like, Bill Farmer, and being like, oh, so, like, he's going to be there, cool. But I didn't, no one told me that he was going to actually announce the song for us. Like, my sister was just as, equally shocked.
I don't think anybody knew, actually.
I remember post the show, like, I actually sat down and sketched him a portrait, like, and he signed it
for me.
And he actually remembered the second time. He was like kind of sad, like, oh, like he was a little sad that I wasn't in the Disney showcase.
Yes, I know, which was so sad. He will be seeing you again, as you are actually taking on the role of Fighting Prawn in Peter and the Starcatcher. We are both currently a part of in rehearsals. We are not going to go into full detail because we are literally getting ready into it. But if you want to know a little bit about Peter and the Starcatcher, buy your tickets for May 14th through May 17th at the Odyssey Theater, which will be Epic Player LA's first main stage production. Go see it. Bella is absolutely hilarious in it for reasons that I will not say on this podcast, but you just have to see it to see what we're talking about. Now, what is next in the cards for you? Because I know that you are still heavily promoting Once More Like Rain Man. You just had a showing for the short film literally just a few days ago. You're now actually heading back to New York City in just a couple of days to actually show the film. What's next?
I hope to do a lot more things. We are doing a feature version of the film. I have a lot of my original universe stuff that I have been working on and writing since I was like in middle school and workshopping for like 10 plus years technically. But I also have another thing that I've been workshopping with my friend Aqua, called Project Deviate, which is kind of like a psychological murder mystery. Now I have two projects that I'm working on with friends. Love working on music and songs, and I remember one of the first things I did with my friend Aqua, like over at her house, was actually just workshop the song called Wonderland, and just it was really fun. And she's one of my best friends. I love her so much. So Aqua, if you see this episode, hi. Love you. I've only known her for a year, but I love her. She's my sister in arms. I will die for her. She's my ride or die.
First off, I think it is so awesome that you have an actual film adaptation of Once More Like Rain Man coming out, just because I think this will really explore more of Zoe's character and, you know, just the Zoe, thank you. Zoe's character throughout the course of this. And it's just so exciting to see you just sort of kind of take this inspiration and develop it into something even bigger. And especially with these projects that you're currently working on, I am thrilled and just so excited to see what you also got working on right now as well. I think it's absolutely brilliant. So this is my last question for you, Bella. As I mentioned and we talked about earlier, the entertainment industry is finally becoming more inclusive to other autistic and neurodiverse actors. What do you wish to say to the entertainment industry in terms of being more inclusive? And what are tips or pieces of advice you have for other aspiring actors on the autism spectrum who wants to break into this industry?
Yes, you can, and it's up to you to make a future that has you in it because no one else is gonna do it for you. That's my best advice, honestly. Because if you're really passionate about something, just go for it. It will be difficult. There will be roadblocks ahead. I didn't say it would be easy, but it's worth it.
Definitely is. And the hard work pays off. And I think you are a phenomenal example of the hard work that pays off. I mean, you've been hustling and it's starting to pay off. And I feel like at this point, the sky is going to be the limit for you. My thanks to Bella Zoe Martinez for this great, insightful conversation. If you liked what you heard on this episode and want to hear other episodes or stay tuned for future episodes, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe to this podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I'm Devin Morrissey, and I'll see you next time right here on Autistically Unapologetic.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Autistically Unapologetic with Devin Morrissey. If you like what you hear and you want to see more, don't forget to rate and subscribe to stay tuned for future episodes. Again, thanks for listening.